Welcome to Cooper Talk. I'm your host, Steve Cooper, and remember, I'm only as hip as my guest. I gotta tell you something, people. This gentleman on my show, he was on 8 years ago, and you know, besides COVID and a strike, this guy's always working. If you watch TV, he's always on, and he was on a show that you have to go check out. It was called The Fix, and if you can find that, watch that. Me and Joanne really enjoyed that, and he's got a lot going on. He's coaching. He has a Sullivan Street Filmworks, and it's Scott Cohen. How you doing, Scott?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So, your website, scottecohen.com, because probably someone had scottcohen.com, who no one knows who he is.
I don't know who he is, but I see him online.
So you go to your page, and there's a picture of you in a clown suit.
Yep.
Tell me about that, because I've heard you were in the circus, too, but tell me about the clown suit.
Well, it's a picture taken me from when I was about 5 years old, and on a Halloween, and I actually hated the costume. I hated the makeup. I wanted to take it off immediately. But it, to me, it kind of represents the joyfulness and the playfulness of what it can be to be an actor and to be a performer and to be someone who expresses themselves through drama or comedy or some kind of whether it's kind of presenting or public speaking, whatever it may be, that's what it kind of represents to me. And the Filmworks part of it is just the idea that I'm producing now, and I'm directing, and I'm teaching, and so there's all kinds of things that I have on my website that I kind of want to attract people to.
Now, Sullivan Street, is that where you grew up?
No, I grew up on another street, but Sullivan Street is kind of where I spent most of my adult life in downtown Manhattan in Soho, and I lived there probably from the age of 20 and for about 25 years, and felt like kind of that's where I matured, that's where I became a father, a husband, and what I kind of categorize myself as an artist. Just kind of learn the ropes of what it is to be an actor.
Now, you said you categorize yourself as an artist. What do you consider an artist? Because, you know, for me, I have a background in stand-up comedy, okay, and I've done a little bit of acting. But I never thought, like, comics, I see comics, oh, we're artists. I never thought of us as artists. But I guess we are because we write and perform. But what to you, how would you define artist in your eyes and in your experiences?
So I think that an artist is someone who, without using the same word, but using the same word, who kind of lives the life of an artist. And how I define that is really only how I kind of define myself. So the way I see who I am is I feel like I've always been, I mean, I started acting when I was like when I was 14, 15 years old, and fell in love with it pretty immediately. And what that first job actually kind of taught me was that I have this kind of this need or this kind of desire to constantly observe the world, and whether it's observance of people's interaction, whether it's observance of people that interact with me or others, whether it's drama, whether it's comedy, whether it's kind of viewing world events, whether it's building a house, whether it's, you know, writing a letter, everything is about observation and absorption to me. And I feel like I have always done that in relationship to creating character. And so to me, it's like, it's a lifelong kind of journey, kind of just being aware and being present and being, and watching and listening and absorbing. And then, at some point, using everything, you know, categorizing or cataloging everything that I see and I do, and somehow using it, you know, whether it's for a character or whether it's something I write or whether it's how I direct. And so that's how I view what being an artist is.
Well, it's funny. You said about observation, and I observe and I can read people. I don't know if it's what it is from, but I go to a lot of business ventures back here in New Jersey, and I can tell when someone's full of shit as soon as they walk in the room. I don't know if it's from years of just, I mean, I've interviewed tons of actors and musicians, but I'll be at a business event and I'll just go, I'll observe and I'll see the body language. And it's a really weird weird feeling because I think sometimes you don't always want to do it. Like you want to just go out. I mean, do you constantly observe? Is there every time where you just sit there and go, I just want to have a cup of coffee, but I'll have a cup of coffee and then I'll look and something will, I'll start watching it. And sometimes you feel creepy because you're like staring that way and they're probably going, what are
you
doing? Yeah,
totally. I've been almost beat up a number of times because I stare too much. I used to stare a lot. On the subway, which is like the best thing I've ever done is like, you know, you just watch on the subway. But I've been, you know, really threatened on the subway a number of times. And I stare. I mean, I literally stare at people. But yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly what it is. And I think, I mean, as a comic, I think you're totally an artist. And I think that you observe, you catalog and you use at some point. You might not use anything, but you're constantly in that process of doing that. I mean, I think that's exactly what an artist does.
Now, tell me about the coaching. I know you're coaching. What is the difference between an acting teacher and an acting coach? Because, you know, I've coached. Do you consider, is there a difference or what? Explain.
I don't think it's different. I mean, coaching is kind of like the term, I think, is used more for people that are helping people with a part. And they're kind of using a coach to kind of get through a play or a movie or a TV show or something, or they want to work on something specific. To me, it's about, you know, it's the same thing. I think it's just about using different terminology. Teaching, I think, sometimes gets into like you're teaching a class. And I mean, I shy away from teaching classes because my time commitment is always fluid. So it's hard to kind of like, you know, commit yourself to, you know, 5, 8, 10 weeks of classes as opposed to, you know, you work with individuals and you can kind of help them through their process that becomes a little more flexible and more fluid in terms of timing.
So if I'm an actor, how do you attack the situation? Because it's like for me, I'll coach some people about interviewing for podcasting. I'll go, you know, I'd say this is how you can do this and this and this. But then again, the person has to be able to have the talent. How do you attack it? Like, do you just sit there? Do you walk in like it's a open canvas? Like someone says, hey, Scott, I feel like I'm good. I want you to coach me. What do? You break them down from the beginning? Do you give them a step? I mean, how does it work?
I think that if I'm good at anything, I think what I'm good at is kind of getting a sense of what someone needs, as opposed to putting my own format or method or whatever I do onto them. So for me, I feel like I can look at somebody and I mean, I've done it long enough to really kind of be able to see, you know, well, where are they kind of struggling and where are they kind of, what might they need work on? And I think it's really just about recognizing someone's, both their strengths and their weaknesses and helping them build up their strengths and kind of mentioning what their weaknesses are. Or not even mentioning them, but kind of focusing on things that could help them break through certain weaknesses. That's kind of how I approach it. And I mean, I have so many different techniques of how to get through that, different exercises or different thoughts and thought patterns to kind of like break through certain things. But that's what I feel like I pretty much bring to the table, my ability to kind of see someone where they're at and what they need to be doing.
Okay, you said earlier that you started, you've been acting since you were 14 or 15. What got you into acting? I mean, you know, you're a good-sized guy, so I thought you might have been an athlete. And I know I read you're a Yankees fan and a Jets. Sorry about the Jets fan. I mean, you just got Hassan Reddick from my Eagles. But what got you into acting?
To be honest, I was an athlete. I played football when I was a kid, and baseball, not basketball really, but baseball and football, and I loved it. But when I was 14, I was asked to audition for a play, and the play was whatever part I auditioned. I don't even know if I auditioned for a part, but whatever part I was given this part, and I saw that the part was, there were other things in the play that I was like thinking, wow, I wonder if I could do those things in the play and play my part at the same time. So combine these two things that are going on in the play, which would, one, make my part bigger, which I'm sure at that age I was like, hey, I want to be the star. Who doesn't want to be the star? And then the other part was just really like, oh, I'm interested in kind of exploring this idea. And I went to the director and I said, hey, what do you think? Can I do this and put this together with this? And then I'd be like this character in the play, and I could do, you know. And he said yes. And it was the first time, I think, that I experienced somebody allowing me to be completely free in how I wanted to express myself. And it's like, you know, it's like when you take piano lessons as a kid and, you know, you have these very rigorous lessons that you take, and there's always, you know, music that you have to play, and you have, you know, your practice scales, and you have this and that. And you rarely have a teacher, if ever have a teacher, that kind of just hooks into what you're interested in and kind of allows you to be free. And then you find the way in through that. This allowed me the way in through kind of exploring something that I never imagined exploring. Like, it never occurred to me. And this guy, I mean, I owe a lot of credit to this guy. I haven't seen him since then. But you know, he was a local guy, and he was an actor, and he directed this play, and he let me do that. And so that's what really turned me on. What turned me on was the idea that I had a way to express myself, and I guess I had a need to express myself. I don't think it was like, you know, it wasn't the audience. Although I think that came later, realizing, oh, you get applause for this, and that's kind of cool. To me, it was always something that, and not to, just to kind of continue your question, but to me, it was always the feeling of being on stage, or the feeling of being on a film set and actually having some outer body experience where you're actually transcending what's on the page. That is the best feeling in the world. It's rare that it happens, but sometimes it happens. And to me, that's the goal. It's to get to that moment where you're actually like, you're kind of beyond where you originally started. And you're actually living the character. And that's a wonderful moment to kind of experience.
So, you know, you have a background on stage. You want to talk about Broadway and stuff like that. But for you now, and I talk to a lot of actors about this, and it's a lot of times you guys who come from the old school, you know, back, you know, on stage, back when film, when you had to nail your takes. For you, with self-auditioning and in the room, what do you prefer? Because I've gotten a split. Some people say it's great because you can keep redoing it, but then some people say you lose that edge and that nervousness when you go into the room. What do you prefer, and which what way do you want to see the industry go with this?
Well, I think it's too late to imagine the industry to go any other way than it is going. I think that ship has sailed. So, you know, I think we just deal with what's here. I think that we have let me just say two things. One is I prefer in the room, and I prefer in the room for a number of reasons. One of which is I feel like taping we've lost spontaneity in taping, and we've lost the ability for someone to come into a room and surprise somebody. Taping, you're really getting to almost what's perfection for whoever is doing it, right? It's as good as you're going to be able to do it within the time frame that you're going to be able to do it. When you walked into a room and you had this amount of time to work on something, and you maybe had two takes that you got, if you were lucky, because most times the casting director would say, okay, thanks, and you were out the room. I think it disengages the actor from a process that is both learning how to deal with rejection, because I think you really understood what rejection was when you walked out of a room with a casting director. And I think really dealing with what is spontaneity, what is surprising somebody, what is surprising yourself, what is the work that goes into developing something in the time frame that you have it, then walking into the room and seeing if you could actually do it. What does commitment mean? All those things, I think, are things that you kind of live with in the room. Taping, I think, creates as near perfection as you can get, as both in terms of how you look, in terms of what it looks like, your performance, your you know, I would say, you know, now the SAG rules is that you don't have to be off book, but everybody's off book. So it's like, it doesn't really matter. Because everybody, you know, you're off book because everybody else is off book. You know, it's like you're memorizing pages and pages of scene. So that's my preference. But I think that, so I actually just had a rehearsal for this, this small film that I'm about to do. And in this rehearsal, they actually brought in two actors that were auditioning for, one of the parts. And so we were reading with each actor, and they were maybe, 20-year-old young women, and I was amazed at how present and how solid and how confident they were. And I think that actually comes from this idea that you are creating the work on your own, and you're creating a certain level of confidence because you're actually able to view what you're doing and at all times kind of check yourself. And it actually, I think, kind of creates some kind of like ground that people are walking on at the moment. Maybe I'm wrong, but witnessing these two young women audition, I was completely like, wow, they don't seem nervous. Everything coming out of their mouth seems, it's great. They just seemed very prepared and very, very ready to rock and roll. And so I'm not really sure, it's what I prefer, but it's not necessarily what is the best situation.
Well, it's funny you said they were very prepared, but you think about it though, the younger generation, they've been in front of a camera forever, whether it's TikTok or
that's true too.
Facebook.
That's, so yeah, that's true.
For us, you know, when you started out, when I started out doing comedy, you had to just go into some shithole and perform for that though. They've been used to having an audience and getting that feedback. And I think that's something that, I mean, my feeling about some of the TikTok and all that is, there's a lot of people with no talent who are getting breaks, but it's also very good for small businesses.
But
you know, you've been in the industry for years. There's also been a lot of people with no talent who've gotten breaks in Hollywood. I mean, so it's
totally. Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I think it is about being in front of the camera. That's probably very true. They're very comfortable. I could go on forever about TikTok and, you know, Instagram. It's all confusing because it's just not the way, you know, even trying to advertise for, you know, for a website, you know, you're looking at things on Instagram and you're looking at things on TikTok. You're like, wow, it's like, I don't think I'll ever be able to do stuff like that. That's really, I have a guy actually who's trying to like put me on video, like making snippets of video, you know, and kind of like giving me hints of like, you know, these are the words that you should use. This is like, you know, and I'm thinking, I don't think that way. It's so hard to kind of like, you know, wrap my head around it. I wouldn't say I'm an entrepreneur, you know?
Well, the thing is also you've been acting for a long time and you've had a lot of success. So it's one thing, it's like, and it's just the feeling you have to be like, hey man, give me my fair due. You know, I don't need to do this shit. I mean, I've been on, you know, I've been on the Gilmore Girls, on this. Tell me about Broadway. How many times have you been on Broadway?
Once.
Okay, now what was that like? Because I talked to Steven Weber, and he said you go there and it's this beautiful thing, and then the stadium, I mean the theater is sort of old, and the dressing room is very small, and all that. What was your experience? And as an actor fan, getting to Broadway, is that like going from, you know, AAA to Yankee Stadium? I mean, what is it like for an actor?
Not for me, it wasn't. You know, I think I was lucky enough before I was on Broadway, I had performed in really big theaters. So I knew what that was like. Right. And it didn't affect me like that. It didn't affect me like in a way that was that I felt like, oh, I feel so special. I'm on Broadway. I felt like it was a natural occurrence that, you know, this is a step and here I am. I mean, if I was the star of something and it was all kind of like leaning on me, I think I probably would feel a little different. But I feel like, it was exciting. I think I'd be really excited to win an Oscar, right? I'd be excited to win a Tony, but I feel like, it's so interesting, man. It's like, I've never really felt the getting somewhere as what my pinnacle is. I've always felt like if I'm not satisfying myself, if I'm not challenging myself, if I don't feel this like discovery in the process, then I don't really care where I am. It's not working for me. And, you know, I love it when I'm really having fun and when I meet people and there's an impact that I have. That's what makes me feel good. So it doesn't matter that the stage was the stage. It matters that, you know, what was I doing and how was I affecting people? I know that might sound very kind of esoteric and like,
oh, no, that's the thing. But, you know, that's the thing. Not everyone's going to have a very deep answer like, hey, you know, it made me feel out, you know. So you're a guy who works a lot. If you look at over your career, IMDb, you've been blessed. You've worked a lot. What was it like for you when the pandemic happened? Because I would think, you know, I talked to some musicians who were like, this is all we do. We go on the road. This is, I don't know what to do. But then they said they enjoyed family time. What was it like for you when the pandemic happened? When did you start sitting there and going, holy shit, this is real. And I might not be working for a while.
I'd say about a year, 9 months into it. In the beginning, it was all like, this is cool. There's nothing to do. And no one else is doing anything either. So it's like, you're like, it's like, that's totally cool. I felt like, you know, I was lucky. I had some intern projects that I was able to do. So that was actually really cool. So I didn't have the whole pandemic not working. But I'll tell you what it did, though. It forced me. I mean, I still think we're recovering from it, to be honest. And I think, you know, we're recovering from the strike even more so. And that I think that was worse, pandemic to strike. That I think really kind of that, you know, as you through the pandemic and realizing, oh, we're getting out of this. And then the strike hitting, it felt like, you know, you had a little bit of air and then it's like, holy Christ, this is not good. But I think that I dealt with it. I mean, I spent more time with my wife during the pandemic than I had probably in the last 30 years. And that was really fun. Like, we've had a really, really good time together. You know, we worried about money a lot. So I think that was a lot. There was a lot of tension in that way. You know, because as an actor, you're just really depending on jobs coming in. And, you know, but we live upstate and I did things around, you know, I built things and I took, you know, the time to kind of learn about stuff, nothing tremendous, but I started writing a lot and I started, you know, my wife, who's a fantastic, like she could, you know, publicize anybody. She started putting out this poetry thing online, which people loved. So we were doing poetry all the time. And I started producing a lot, like thinking about projects that would come up. And so right now I have four projects that I'm in the middle of producing that were all started in COVID. And so now it's like now I'm actually looking for money for all these things are kind of complete in one stage. And now we're on to the next stage, which is fantastic, like really kind of motivating. So that's really cool. So I think that's kind of what happened. I mean, I more saw it as like a, in terms of the negative side, I mean, I just saw it really through my kid's lens, who was like, and he was in college at the time and worrying about the future of America more than anything else. I mean, that to me worries me more than anything else.
Now, as I said, you've had some great roles. The Gilmore Girls. I mean, people still must remember you for that. That's one of those roles.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it must be weird. I mean, my friend Rose Abdu, she played the mechanic. She goes her, I've known her husband for years. They go to like this little town where they have a reunion and people just really are crazy about it. How did that affect you? Because you're already known, people have seen your work, but with something like that, it is such a, they just are so into it. And then with streaming, I mean, did you all of a sudden just get in some crazy, not crazy, I won't say crazy, some fanatical fans coming at you just like all of a sudden, like, oh my God, Gilmore Girls, because I could see that happen with that kind of show.
Yeah, the answer is just yes. It's fanatical and it's never been, nothing weird has happened with me. I had more weird things happen early on in my career. But I mean, because of the internet now, I guess, lots of fans, lots of recognition. There's, you know, because it plays constantly. It's a huge thing. I get involved with, you know, not, I don't get involved, but like people involve me in the competition between me and the other guy and me and other, you know, paramours of Lorelai Gilmore. And, you know, it was such a wonderful time in my career. It was, you know, doing it was really fun. And just getting to know, the creator, Amy Sherman Palladino and Lauren Graham was just really spectacular moment in time. And, now it's like, it's a bit crazy. It's not crazy, crazy, but it's, you know, I would say every day you go out and somebody's saying, are you like that?
Tell me about The Fix. I really like that show. The Fix was, me and my wife enjoyed that. And it was one of those things, you didn't know what the hell was going on. And so it's like anything. I think it came out in 2019. So we were back here then. And, We don't watch a lot of the same TV, but we watched that. Now, is that a kind of a role you like? Because you were that lawyer. I mean, it's like you're sort of swarmy, but they you like the guy. But then, and I've interviewed you before, so I'm like, well, I know he's not like, you know. But what is a role like that for you? I mean, is that good when you know it's a 10, it was one season. It's like it was only supposed to be one season. Is that good as an actor because you can really sit there and develop that? Even though it's written, you can really develop that character and get to know it.
I loved that character. I do not think, I mean, I wish there were more seasons to kind of really, flesh him out a little bit more, but they really wrote for me, really quite extensively and well. So I so appreciate them for doing that. And no one stopped me. So I was pretty much, I was on my own and I just did what I did. And enjoyed every minute of it. And I was a devious, manipulative con artist that, you know, that enjoyed what he did for what he thought was all the right reasons. And and then had a relationship with this guy that was really special. Like, you know, I do think that there was a great similarity between OJ and Robert Shapiro and, you know, the concept of like someone representing someone, and how guilt or not guilt doesn't come into the relationship. It's just about saving, protecting, and recognizing what is good in somebody, although what they could have done might have been very bad. That's a really interesting character to play for me. I love it. I loved it.
When you say you're going to flesh a character, how do you flesh a character out? When you go for an audition, okay, you see the words on paper, and the difference between an actor and someone who doesn't perform is if you see a line that says tall, dark, handsome gentleman, lawyer, hey, Jimmy, what are you doing? Normal person just sees it, hey, Jimmy, what are you doing? Do you dissect the role or do you just go off instinct when you go to an audition? Do you just look at the page and go, you know what? This is how I'm going to do it. Because I would think, because you've been in a lot of stuff, people sometimes have a preconceived notion of you. They go, okay, well, you know, we've seen Scott and this and this and this. And they don't know. How do you overcome that? I mean, how do you sit there and dissect a role? I mean, how do you get ready to prepare for that audition or your self-tape or whatever it is?
If you have time, you hopefully, can let things kind of just evolve in you, as you kind of read through a script, which I think is always really important if you have the time to read through a script or if you have it at all, and really just kind of, follow what's going on in your scene, or scene. To me, it's, I would say that I feed off of my instinct, so I really try very hard to just be instinctual about material, but I then go into what I consider fleshing something out, and that would be in relationship to really understanding what somebody's trying to accomplish in a scene and what they're trying to get at and what they're trying to get at overall. And if I could figure that out, then my instinct will just be built upon, or sometimes my instinct will just be correct, and then I just have to figure out, oh, I have to go back to that. But to me, every audition is an opportunity, and so it's an opportunity to kind of like really spend time with somebody you might know, you might not know, and give them some humanity. And whether it's a line that's like, hey, Jimmy, how you doing? There's a guy out there who says, hey, Jimmy, how you doing? But, you know, he just found out that his cat died. He just came from his house and his wife's a fucking, you know, she's out of her mind. He has a kid who's autistic. You know, he crossed the street and somebody tried to hit him with a car. It's like there's a million things that are going on in that guy's head. And then he's coming to a situation where he's saying, hey, Jimmy, how you doing? And, you know, who's Jimmy? What's Jimmy to him? Like, these are all the things that I think about. And that's fun. That's really fun to do. I mean, you don't always get it, you know, not the part, but you don't always get what you're doing. But if you can allow yourself the time to figure that out, then that's the artistic process. That's what's really joyful.
Now, I remember last time I interviewed you, and I've done so many of these, but I remember you said how much you loved the show Street Time.
Yeah.
Tell me what was so special about that, because you've been in some really good shows. I mean, what made that show that just something that you said it was very memorable. What was it? I mean, what makes a show memorable to you?
Right. So first of all, we were working with some actors that are just phenomenal actors. So Eric Alexander, Terrence Howard, Rob Morrow, Michelle Nolden. These people, they upped the game, and they really provided a set that was challenging and interesting and dynamic, and you had to be on your toes, right? The second thing is that it was a show that was created by a guy who had never run a show before, and so his kind of the way he came to it was so unique and not your normal fare, that the way he wrote and the way the show was structured and how we shot it was really fun and new and exciting. It was improvisatory. We were creating scenes on the fly. We were, you know, looking at scripts and realizing we need to use this, we need to get this, we need to take this out, we need to do this here right on set. And so it was the energy was like what you see in The Bear, right? And often what you see in The Bear are like, and I know they're not written lines, they're improvised lines that are kind of like, you know, like people are feeding off of each other and you're getting to a point because of the tension that's building in the scene. That's what we did. And it was an absolute, it changed my life. It changed my life politically because I got to know people that were involved in politics in a way that I had never been before. And it got me involved, I think, in terms of acting. I think it made me understand things about acting that I never really understood before. I really understood about camera and angles and the way cameras move and can see you and not see you, how you could provide something new for a camera, you know, all that stuff. It was like a playground for actors, and it seemed like everybody who came into it was finished. So we did this. I remember we did this one show with Judd Hirsch. He played a rabbi that was corrupt. I think he was a rabbi. I'm not even sure actually. He was corrupt though. He was a gambler and he had a lot of. He was like laundering money and all this stuff. And he had this one scene with me where he gets caught, and we're in a hotel room. And he had this huge monologue, and it was written, but they asked him to come up with things that he had, you know, that weren't on the page. And he went home, and he wrote out two pages of a monologue, and came back and did this monologue. And he was just like, it's fantastic. You know, it might not be like the best written, like for what the plot may be or what, you know, but like as a human being, as a character, kind of voicing his thought process in this moment, it was all Judd Hirsch, and it was absolutely brilliant, and that was really cool. That's what we did.
So you had some great jobs. I'm sure you've had some stinkers. That's just anything in life. You know, there's some sets you go, oh god. But what is it? You know, and I tell people in the business world, I go, well, you know, I talked to a lot of actors. I said, you know, it's not all what you guys think. It's not all they're living in these mansions. I said, I said they get more rejection. You're in sales. You're in sales. I'll tell someone, you're in sales. You get less rejection than actors. So for you, and you've been lucky, not lucky, blessed, what is it that keeps you in the game? I mean, has there ever been a point where you just said, fuck it. I can't take this. I love it, but it's just a roller coaster. Because all of us who are creative, we wake up in the middle of the night and go, oh crap, you know, oh my God, you know, some. But what has kept you going? Because have you ever had self-doubt, or have you always known things will work out?
No. Every day I wake up, I have self-doubt. And when I go to bed, I have self-doubt. In the middle of the day, I have self-doubt. I have a wife, Anna, who I think has been probably the healthiest person in my life that's allowed me to understand that she's believed in me and supported me. And so that lifts me up every day. I think that I have great representation, and I've always had great representation for as long as I've been working, that have really supported me in very, very dark times and very, very light times, like in terms of financial, bringing in finances. I have a great agent at the moment who I adore. And my management team has been with me since 1988. I just have people around me that just seem to care. And, you know, I probably should have a lot less self-doubt than I do, because all these people seem to believe in me. And so it's like, why would I have any self-doubt? But, you know, we're human and we do. But I constantly question. I constantly question decisions. I constantly question. I mean, I'm at the point now, or not at the point, but I think I finally came to a place where, you know, because I have worked a lot and I've kind of depended on, you know, things coming to me, because that's what you get used to. You get used to things coming to you, that I think I've lost along the way a certain kind of sense of self-empowerment. And I think I'm now just beginning to understand, oh, I do have the ability to do what I want to do, and that's okay. Like, I could do that. And it might, you know, I might not be making money at it, but I can do it. And it'll be mine, and it'll be from my heart, and it'll be from my body, and my, you know. And so that's really, I'm just getting to that now. And it's been a long time, and you know, that it hasn't been like that. But yeah, I have a lot of self-doubt constantly.
Has there any been a big career disappointment? I know you were on the Law and Order show for 10 episodes. It was a trial and error. Trial and jury.
Trial and jury. Yeah.
Was that a disappointment that didn't get picked up? Because, I mean, I think as an actor, if you see, hey, Law and Order, holy shit, I'm working for 10 years. I mean, come on.
I was like, of course, this is going to go on forever. I don't even know why it was canceled. I guess nobody watched it. I have no idea. That, too, was a job that, you know, I replaced Jerry Orbach. Or actually, I mean, it wasn't even replacing Jerry at the time. At the time, they hired me, but it became replacing Jerry Orbach, right? I had a meeting, Waylon Green and other writers on the show. I had a meeting with them before the show started. And they asked me, they said, what do you want your character to be? How do you see him developing? How do you see him growing? What do you see him being? And we had long discussions about that. And they completely wrote a character that I was like, I'm so into this guy. And that was right after Street Time, actually. So it was like, it was really cool. It was a great experience. It was a shame. I was very depressed. That wasn't good. That job, I fell asleep on a train, and I was woken up by a phone call on cell phone, which at that time, you know, not many people. I was woken up by a phone call from Waylon saying that the show wasn't going to get picked up. And since then, if I fall asleep knowing that something is going to happen, maybe, I say I'm going to get a phone call during this nap, during this, you know, and it's going to be bad news. I swear to God, it's like I'm so suspicious, and so I try not to sleep ever. No. when I know something's about to happen, I try not to take a nap.
Now, as you look through your IMDb, you were on Curb. It was years ago, and it's funny because I loved it. I thought the season finale of Curb was wonderful. I was sitting there.
Me too.
I thought this whole season was good. And you know how it is, and people are like, "Oh yeah, this isn't as funny." I'm like, "What are we watching different shows?" I mean, there was some shit. Springsteen. I'm a Springsteen fan. Springsteen to say floor fucker.
Oh my god, yeah.
I mean, there was someone at a Springsteen concert holding a sign that said, "I'm a floor fucker." I mean, that's just funny shit. Tell me about your experience on Curb, because it was a long time ago.
When I auditioned for it, I don't think this was the audition, but when I auditioned for it, you walk in and Larry was there and Jeff Garland was there, and they talk to you for a second. It's like Woody Allen, like he talks to you for a second, and then they say, we're just going to put you in a scene and, you know, do what you want to do. And, you know, that'll be that. And I was like, oh, great. So they gave me a scene. I worked with Jeff, I think, and I forget what it was, and then I was about to walk out of the audition and I said to myself, why? I can't walk out of this audition without saying something. So I turned around and I said, Mr. David, I just have to tell you that you have changed the face of comedy. I adore what you do. I think you're one of the geniuses of the 20th century. Thank you for blah, 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 blah. And then I found out I didn't get the part. I was like, that motherfucker. And I didn't say that. So I didn't get the part. And then like a week later, I guess either somebody dropped out or something happened or they changed it, because I'm sure they changed a lot of stuff all the time. And they hired me, right? And then when I came, and then they told me what I was going to be, and that was it. And I did all this research. I did, like, you know, I wrote down all these ideas. I was like, I could talk about this. I could talk about this. I'm going to talk about this. I'm going to talk about this. And then when I got on set, it was like none of that really worked. It was like you had to just be present, kind of follow them, answer them. Sometimes you get a prompt from the directors, talk about this. And you just kind of improvise in the moment with them. And they're, you know, sometimes you can't say a word because between the two of them, it's hysterical. And I think they're improvising. Like, I have no idea. It could go on for like a half an hour. And so I thoroughly enjoyed it. I had a really good time doing it. To me, it wasn't long enough. I wanted to do more and more and more.
Now, I saw on your Facebook the movie, and it's such a long title. Feeling that the time.
Yeah, the feeling that the time. Tell me
about that. Tell me because it's who is the director? I'm not familiar with her.
Yeah, so this woman Joanna Arnau. So I did this. I did this like web series a number of years ago, and the producer of the web series came to me and said, "Hey, would you like to do this movie?" And they sent me the script, and I loved the script. And it was very odd and unconventional. And I looked this woman up, and she had just won for shorts, best short at Berlin. So she won the Silver Bear, or whatever it is, at Berlin. And I thought she was a genius. I was like, okay, I want to work with this person no matter what. And so they said, so we talked a little bit. They offered me the part. I said yes. And this was during COVID, and they were not able to get it together during COVID. They kept on coming up short with insurance money, because the insurance money during COVID was huge. And then towards the end of COVID, they finally said, you know, let's get to this. And we spent the summer shooting it. And I think she's a genius. I think that she has a very droll, dry sense of humor. It's about her kind of sexual identity and her moving through life as a BDSM participant. And she is trying to just live her life and love her life the way it is, but people keep getting in the way. And but it's done very humorously. And she's naked through like half the movie. And so at first you're kind of like, what? But you're like, it's like a costume. Like she has no clothes on. And I think it's great. And we shot this movie. She was very clear about what her vision was. And then it exploded. It went to Cannes. It went to New York and Toronto and AFI and Deauville and every major film festival in the world, and has been very, very, very successful on the festival circuit, and then got picked up by Magnolia at Cannes, and then and opens up on Friday.
Now, also, the girls on the bus. Tell me about that, because I know my wife watched that and she loved it.
Yeah. Girls on the Bus was a great, this is actually my first job with my new agent. This was like, to be honest, I mean, Girls on the Bus, there were two things that attracted me. One was Amy Chosik's book, which I had read, about her life on the campaign trail with Hillary Clinton. So that was just immediately interesting to me. And it was just interesting to be kind of like part of something like four women that kind of are, making their way through journalism and talking about things that I think are important. And then I got to work with Carla Cugino, who I've been a fan of for a very long time, and who I think is super, super, super talented. And I got to play her husband, and I had a fantastic time with her. I thought it was great. I saw the pilot, but I haven't seen subsequent episodes. But I hear it's pretty good.
Do you watch yourself? Like, I never listen to my... The only time I listen to shows of this is, and this is sad, is if a guest passes away. And unfortunately, over the years, a lot have. And you sit there, go, oh, I want to remember, like, when Willie Garson passed away. He did the show twice. Or when Ed Asner passed away. You sit there, and that's the only time I listen. I don't want to listen to myself. I don't, you know, I hear myself in my head, and I go, oh, I stammer, screw this shit. Do you watch yourself on screen? And now that you direct, like, you're getting more into directing, do you think that would be beneficial to watch yourself on screen when it comes to noticing what other directors do?
That's a good question in terms of directing. I'm not quite sure about that yet. I'm not a huge fan of watching myself on screen. And the only reason I think that is because If I watch myself and I'm not surprising me watching it, I feel like I failed. And so I don't want to feel like that. I want to just pass it by. So that's how I feel. And it's, you know, maybe that's kind of stupid to feel that way, but I think that it's, I don't really love looking at myself I would say, you know, most of the time I kind of know what I did, so I'm not surprising myself, but I would like to see something where it's like, oh, like this movie that I just did, when I watched that, I was like, oh, I did that? Well, that's interesting. I didn't even know I did that. That's interesting to me. Like, oh, I said, I love doing that. But other than that, no, I don't really like watching myself.
So you've had a very good career. What are some of the things that you consider a highlight or make you proud about your career? Just give me a few that, you know, you sit there and go, holy shit, man, I've done okay. You know, it's hard for people to say that, but what are some points that you consider that made you proud and are high points to you?
I put my son through college and through graduate school. That's a high point for me. If you're talking about like certain specific jobs that have happened, yeah, that are highlights. Yeah. Okay. So, The Tenth Kingdom, which was a fantasy miniseries, which we're trying to make a sequel to that. That was a highlight. Because, one, I was shooting in Europe for a year. And that was just so much fun. A character that I really delved into that was part clown and part animal and part human being, and that was just so, so cool. And it has had enormous impact over 25 years. And so that's a global sensation that continues to have impact, and that makes me very, very, very proud of something that I've been able to do that's had that kind of impact. That's changed people's lives. Like, that's how I feel like that's important, right? I think Street Time was definitely a huge moment that I'm really proud of, because it wasn't your usual fare. And it's something that it proved that you don't have to do it the way people say you're supposed to do it. And it could come out pretty good. And you know, because everybody says, well, this is the way it has to be. You know, it's almost like, you know, you look at story structure, and if you're not writing in a 3-act story structure, your movie can never be made. And I disagree with that. I think that there's lots of ways to express yourself, and it's sad that we live in a world that, you know, this is the way it's supposed to be, this is the way it should be, and if you're not doing it that way, then it's not going to work. Street Time, to me, proved that you can do it a different way, and it can work. I would say, in terms of theater, doing plays of my wife's has been really, really fun. And highlights, because it's put us in a position where we are at our best, where, you know, she's at her most creative, I'm at my most creative, and we're doing it together. And, that's really special and fun. That I think that's those are highlights, and that's continuing to happen. So that's fun. I'd say that, I think Gilmore Girls is a highlight, mainly because of who I met on Gilmore Girls and how much they've impacted my life. But Gilmore Girls was always really special because I was there at 9/11, and they got me out. And, you know, because we were living in Soho, and my wife and my son were here, and they spent 24 hours getting me out of L.A. And that I'll never forget that. I think that was a highlight of my career, too.
Well, here's a question then. Who's someone you've worked with that you were like, holy shit? Like one, is there anyone who ever intimidated you on set? And two, were you ever like, I can't believe I'm working with this person?
I worked with Robert De Niro. I wasn't intimidated, and I thought I would be. He was just normal, and just, you know, we did a scene and it was totally fine. Chris Walken, I've worked with, who I thought was going to be intimidating, wasn't intimidating. I have never been intimidated by anybody working with anybody. I think I've been shy sometimes of people. Like, I haven't quite, like, you know, I lose a sense of who I am in the mix. I felt very, like, I did this movie called Love and Other Drugs, where I felt very unbalanced. So I didn't feel like I was working with Jake Gyllenhaal and Ed Zwick, and that felt just weird. Like, I felt like I couldn't find my footing in that. So that felt weird. But I've never been intimidated. Like, I've never felt intimidated by anybody. I have felt more intimidated with not even with directors, but with casting people. I have felt intimidated, like they've put fear in me, as opposed to directors who I've auditioned for, who didn't put fear in me, but made me feel like, oh, I could do this, or I'm going to start heading in this direction. I mean, I've auditioned for Oliver Stone and John Sayles. I remember auditioning for John Sayles once, who. It was one of the greatest auditions I ever had in my life. It was like, I mean, I felt like, okay, so you're my dad. You're actually like, that's who you're like, that's how you're presenting yourself. You're actually almost like my father right now. And like, so cared for, so nurturing, so wonderful, so interested in what I was bringing to the table. And, I was like, I'm just some young actor. It's like, I'm a dime a dozen, man. It's like, why are you doing that? And that was amazing. And I feel like if I could ever be like that, that would be really great. There were moments like that are highlights, too. Tom DiCillo, I remember auditioning for Johnny Suede, if you remember that movie with Brad Pitt. This was like 1987, 88, something like that. But then there are people that are, you know, they're just not nice people, and who I'm not going to mention, but there are a lot of them. And who they're not nice people, and they like to be intimidating. They like to kind of put fear in you. You know, I worked with Adrian Lyne, you know, on Jacob's Ladder, who should have been intimidating. He should have been, you know, psycho. He had every reason to be, every right to be. But he was the nicest guy in the world, who, you know, working with Tim Robbins and Elizabeth Peña, who passed away. He taught me everything about film acting. I mean, he was just like, he was so ridiculously nice, and then remembered me like years later. Scott, how are you? Like, just crazy stuff that, you know. Yeah, I don't think it's like I haven't run into that many people like that. And it's, you know, and maybe that's just because of me. It's like, you know, I just don't see it or something, or I don't know.
Well, here's something about your career. What's your cheesiest way you've gotten killed?
I got killed in this movie, Wharf Rat, where I was shot, like straight up. And this wouldn't happen now, right? This is probably against the law. So this is like with real, like, you know, with squids and with like real, with what are they called? Blank rounds, like real close up. But I got shot, and it was the first time that I ever used guns in a movie. And I said bang bang as I was getting shot, and we didn't shoot it again. It was so horrible. I said bang bang, and then I stood there for a second, like realizing, oh shit, I just said bang bang, and I got shot, and then I like fell to the ground, and I'm dead now. That was like the stupidest way I think I've died. The cheesiest, that's probably the cheesiest. I don't remember.
Off the top of my head. This has been great. I got one more question. What's your future, man? What we have coming up? What are your goals? I mean, you know, it's so funny when we sit there and after the pandemic, everyone's changed a lot. You know, a lot of people started their own businesses and now everyone has different goals. And for you, you've been acting, but now you're coaching and producing and directing. What are your goals for in the next 5 years? Because as we get older, if we're in entertainment or any of this, we never stop. It's not like we're getting a gold watch and walking away. We don't stop. So what are your goals over the next years? And then tell me a few projects coming up.
My goals are, I'd like to be happy. Very difficult for me to do. Just be happy, and I think that is about me. Like I talked before about empowering myself, like doing my own stuff in my own way, in my own time. I need money to do that, so you know, so money's always an issue. But that's where I want to be. I want to be working with people I love, people, you know, things that I enjoy, things that challenge me. I like to be wearing a beard and not have to worry about how I look. I'd like to play more characters rather than straight men, lawyers or whatever. I like to play people that are flawed. Those are all the things that I dream of doing. I think projects that are coming up. I have a movie. I have this movie that's coming up on Friday. I have another movie that's coming up hopefully in the fall called Mooch, which was great, directed by this guy named Jeff Ryan. I have my wife's play, which is called Seagulls on Sullivan Street. We're going to produce as a kind of nonprofit commercial production in New York with the director's company is executive producing it, Leah McCallos. And Cheryl Collar, director, is directing it. So we're very excited about that. I have The Tenth Kingdom 2, the second series. We are now at a point where we feel like, oh, we're getting somewhere, and that might be something that's going to happen in the next year or so. So we're keeping our fingers crossed on that. I have a movie that I'm producing with a guy, Lauren Ambrose's husband, Sam Handel. We're taking the book The Memory of Running, which was written by Ron McClarty. We're doing the movie of that. what else am I doing? I'm coaching. I'm teaching. I just built my website and put that out online and getting students, and that's really fun. Which is actually one of the. I would love to be teaching a lot more. I love it. That's a lot, right?
That's a lot.
And I just wrote a short, which I really love, which I have a producer attached to, who's like, you know, she's pushing me to be better. And I'd really like to direct that. That's actually, that I'd like to do by the fall.
Okay, Well, this is great, Scott. People, go to the website. It's Scott E. Cohen. Just not Scott Cohen, because I did that. And I said, who's this guy with a bald guy with a mustache? That's not Scott Cohen.
It's like Scott E. Cohen.
Yeah, Scott E. Cohen. It's Scott E. Cohen, right? Yeah, Scott E. Cohen.
Scotty.
People, go check it out. Go to IMDb. Look at all his shows. Go watch him. You'll enjoy his work. And go watch The Fix. You will really like that. Go to my website, coopertalk.net. You can find 1,004 episodes up there. You can email me at coopertalk.net. Also, if you're in the South Jersey, Philly area, I'm starting a new comedy club. Starts January 4th. It'll be twice a month. There's this great new space in Pennsauken. It's got a seating for 50 upstairs, seating for 80 downstairs, a full-on recording studio, and a great networking area. It's called the Soundplex, and Soundplex Studios will be starting Speakeasy Stand-Up. That is May 4th. So message me at Cooper, coopertalk.net if you want ticket information. Remember, I'm Steve Cooper. I'm only as hip as my guests. Don't forget, drink your water, eat your vegetables, take your vitamins, and I'll talk to you next time.